Welcome to the Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible and even make a playlist. I'm Matt Cadle, pastor on sabbatical from St. Mark's Lutheran Church and Campus Ministry in Los Angeles, California.
And sitting high above the crowded streets of downtown Asheville, North Carolina, I'm Zach Paris. I can't see the record store. I'm feeling not as safe as I normally do when we record, Matt, but I'm going to do my best.
Wow. Zach, I went to see some, I was going to say the live podcast, but it wasn't a live podcast, but it was some podcast hosts who were live. We've done a couple live episodes in our lives, just a few. You can count them on one hand.
I like to think every time we hang out in person and have a conversation, it's just an unrecorded episode.
Yeah, that's basically, yeah, that's why our wives look at us like, why are you talking like that? It's like, well, it's a radio voice. Yeah, instead of greeting each other, just say, welcome to the Vinyl Preacher. It's a little awkward.
Sure, this is a Wendy's.
I like to listen to podcasts from the Ringerverse. I don't know if you've listened to some of those. I think they did some binge mode, but they tend to do a lot of coverage of tends to be my Marvel and Star Wars properties and some others. There's a podcast called The Midnight Boys where they do like reaction podcasts. Sometimes I'm into it and sometimes they're just a little too harshly critical and I just need to take a break because I just want to enjoy what I like.
You need more of an Adam Scott.
Yeah. Or what you need is a Mallory Rubin, because I mean, their other podcast has to do is House of R, which is their sister podcast where they do deep dives, where there will be a 3-hour episode to cover a 30-minute episode of TV, which I really appreciate, you know, I really appreciate. And unlike you talking YouTube to me, they're actually talking about the episode for a good 3 hours, which is pretty impressive.
It's impressive.
So it's good. But one of the hosts, Joanna Robinson, just put out a book on the MCU. It's like 400 pages long. It's pretty comprehensive. And she was in a book signing at Barnes & Noble, and she was being interviewed by Mallory Rubin. And I just saw this advertised to me, and I was like, I can do that. That's just up in the Grove. I live in Los Angeles. I can go to things like this. You know, I'm going to do this. Yeah. I'm going to go. So I signed up. I bought my book. I love a good book signing, you know, and then here's a book signing from like a podcast that I listen to whenever I do the dishes. It's great. So I went up there and two things happened. I mean, it's pretty fun to hear people that you only hear in your ears, and there they are live, which I imagine is the experience that people have going to a Vinyl Preacher live recording.
Wow, just running to you on the street at the Grove.
I mean, I did write out something that I was going to post, and I was like, nah, everyone's going to think this is dumb. But it was a packed crowd. And they had built an audience just based solely on this podcast, right? Like, and people were like, they've got like a little community. Like, it's very interesting to me. We'll have to talk about that another time. What was I going to say? Two things happened. One is that there were podcast hosts from the sister podcasts, because I guess they were coming out to support. And so it was like people were just taking pictures with everyone there because everyone was geeking out. Like, these are all, it's all the podcast people. The other thing that was really interesting was we get to the signing line. And what I'm used to is kind of what I experienced with Wilco last week, which is moving through the line very, very quickly. You get like a cursory smile from the author slash artist, you know, maybe you have time to say like two things, like one sentence or something. Right. When I was in line at Wilco, I tried to take a picture as they were signing and the lady said, no pictures. She was very nice. And it wasn't even that they didn't want pictures like of themselves, because then people were taking pictures after they had it signed. They just didn't want to slow the line down because there were so many people in line. That was it. Because they want to keep it moving. This book signing, the first person goes up to get the book signed and she talks to her for like 5 minutes. And I'm like, are we going to, and then the next person, it was the same thing again. Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, like on the one hand, that's really cool. On the other hand, now I feel anxiety about, I did not prepare, like any in-depth, you know, questions or anything. I just sort of say, hey, thanks for writing this and, you know, move on. So it did give me great anxiety. But I finally decided, okay, I'm just going to ask, like, how'd you make it through a 400-page book? Like, how long did it take you to write this? She said 5 years. to write a book, write this book? And how do you stay with it during that time? And she actually co-wrote it with two other people. So she says, well, you gotta find your people. Like, it really, people matter. Even if you write the book by yourself, like, you really, the people around you really matter. So that was very helpful. And then I was going to avoid the line to like greet the podcast hosts, because I was like, this seems kind of impromptu. I don't need to be like a, like, but then that was the exit. Like, you had to walk that way anyway. You had to go through this gauntlet.
And after church. Yeah.
Yeah. You had to like go through the gauntlet. So I was like, all right, I can stand in this line and just, I'll thank them for their work. And then I was like, no, I'm going to ask them some podcasting advice. So I was like, what, you know, in your, I was like, first, you're like, thank you so much for what you do. I listened the hours of dishwashing that I've done listening to your podcast.
Who are we talking to here?
Mallory Rubin, who you listen to visually, I think. Steve Allman, who's like one of the, he's on the Midnight Boys podcast. He's the white guy. Otherwise, all the people of color in this podcast, and he's the one white guy, which they poke fun at all the time. But those, they were there, and I said, so what makes for a really good episode? Like, what's the one ingredient that you think elevates an episode to, like, that was a good app. You know, like, that was a good one. What really elevates it?
Did you say it at the end?
And they said, I didn't say that because that's a different podcast. Although it would be really fun if the Scots did a live podcast. I think I would.
Oh, I'd fly out for that.
Really try to be there. So Steve says the care that Mallory puts into it, the care that you take. I was like, I wonder like what that means. But, and so it's like a little bit vague, but it was like, you know, they put a lot of care to this. And she's like, you really respect the fact that people are like giving you their time, and letting you speak into their ear for a long time. So, you know, that's what we do with our podcast as well. We definitely don't just show up and shoot the shit for an hour. but I thought, you know, yeah, it was very helpful. So I asked for advice from, you know, other podcasters. That was fun. And then they asked me, Zach, they said, do you have a podcast? Are you podcast? And I was like, yeah, yeah. And then of course they asked, what's it about? And they had to be like, well, I work at a church. so it's a podcast about preaching and popular culture. So, and they did not recoil in horror.
Like, no,
it's really cool. Yeah, they were like, no, it's really cool, and it's really important. Like, they're like, even if you have a smaller niche market, to be able to have a community, like, you got to start and you can build something around that. So, which of course we have, dear listeners. So thank you for listening. But yeah, definitely that moment where I had to confess that I was indeed a reverend.
Reverend.
So I did a thing. I did a thing, Zach. I went to learn, I did some continuing education to learn more about podcasting from fellow podcasters. That's what I did on Monday.
Second week in a row, you were in an autograph line, Matt. You talked about the podcast, which is a step in the right direction. I am going to ask, did you ask Mallory Rubin to join us on the podcast?
I was like, this is really what like a really good networker would do. But I didn't. I still feel very, I don't know, man. It's just, maybe that's what I've got to get to. I've got to get there. But like, because I've seen the people where it's like, here's a business card, you know, like, hey, let me like, and I just don't want to start there. But it's also like, it's like I'm going to have a long relationship with these people. I've got 2 minutes, you know, like,
yeah.
So you can't really warm it up. Yeah, maybe I'll get better being a salesman. This is why my church, people say, is your church growing? And I go, I mean, not numerically, because I'm not very good at being like, hey, we've got worship on Sunday. Would you like to come? Like, that's just not, I'm not good at inviting. I don't know if inviting is going to be part of the text today, but yeah.
Fun fact, I don't know. How exciting, Matt. You've been on sabbatical for, it seems like, eons at this point. How much longer is the great sabbatical of 2023 forecasting for?
Well, as I sang with my church before I left, I'm gone till November.
November.
So we'll be back in the office November 1st. Yeah. Yeah. I definitely timed it to match the song. But my goal in October is to work ahead a little bit so that I'm not, you know, just slammed when I arrive. But I've got some kind of sermons outlined for the first few weeks. You know, that's the dream. We'll see if I actually get there.
Yeah, this has been my favorite recurring bit on the podcast where I forget how long your sabbatical is and just check in.
Yeah, nobody knows. There are people that email me and are like, hey, I see you're back from sabbatical. No, I'm just, no, not yet.
I'm just keeping on, keeping on. Well, Matt, are you preparing? We're days away, 2 days away. I mean, technically, we've always been days away, but now we're just two of them. 2 days away from UVU2 in the UV sphere. Have you packed sunscreen?
I have not packed sunscreen.
UV sphere. I don't know.
Just to be, in the interest of accuracy, it's not the sphere. It's just sphere. There's no just article. Sphere.
Okay. No U2, article.
Is U2 at sphere?
Where does UV? Isn't it UV sphere?
UV is the name of the U2 show. So it's U2 UV live at sphere. And the UV in U2 UV, the UV stands for ultraviolet, which is a song off of their 1991 album, Octung Baby, which is being celebrated at this concert. And that song, Ultraviolet, thanks for sending me on down this deep dive. We'll see you back at the text in about an hour. I picked up the book U2 at the End of the World, which is written by Bill Flanagan, and it's about their Octung Baby through Zooropa period. Came out in 1995. And I read it in college as part of an independent study that I did on U2 and postmodernism. I wrote a 20-page paper, longest paper I've ever written in my life. And I found this book while I was cleaning out the garage. I found it again, and I started reading it. It's so good. It's so good. The song, the imagery of Ultraviolet actually came from they went to Berlin to record this album, and they arrived in Berlin. They were on the last flight.
Octung.
The last flight landing in Berlin as before the wall fell down. So the wall's like coming down, like as they're there, right? And they want to be there, like in the spirit of all that. And they've got this great story about how they tried to join a parade as soon as they arrived, and they were like, "Man, this parade is like." They were all excited, like, we're going to join a parade celebrating this thing. And, like, everybody around them was, like, really kind of bummed out and, like, really dour and serious. And they were like, what is going on? Like, these Germans do not know how to celebrate. This is so strange. And then they realized they were in a protest parade of people that wanted to keep the wall up.
Huh.
And they were like, shit, we need to get out of this parade. But they were in East Berlin, and the ultraviolet light, like, that, like, they said even the lighting was different in East Berlin and West Berlin. Mm-hmm. And there was just this kind of ultraviolet light, and they were really struck by that. And people trying to grow plants in the shadow of these brick buildings, just all this stuff. So it's actually inspired, that title is actually inspired by Berlin, which I've now been to. So anyway, where were we talking about? Going to the sphere, not the sphere, just sphere. We're going to sphere. I am really excited because Octung Baby is my favorite U2 album. It's just so good. So we'll see how they explore it. Should be fun. And I always love a good spectacle. People can roll their eyes at spectacle. I'm here for it. Let's go. Let's see how batshit crazy can we get. I'm here. Let's do it. Also, Zach, I hadn't sold the tickets for a long time. I had two extra tickets.
Yeah. It's
two people who shall remain nameless. Decided they were not going to go. And I was in denial about it for a long time. So I didn't do anything with the tickets. I just like looked at them and was like, what am I going to do? Finally, last night, I was like, shit, I can't just like have these two empty seats be staring at me. And so I sold them and I got twice as much as I paid for them from Ticketmaster. So
pay for your other tickets.
That's right. So now I don't feel quite so bad. I will miss you guys, but you know, that's
good
consolation prize. It's a consolation prize. So,
yeah. That's still, you know, I believe we're going to get the technicalities of it. I was supposed to be officiating a wedding in Colorado on Friday. That didn't work out. So there was a glimmer of hope, but then real life beat me down. And then I felt tremendous regret as I saw the Instagram stories, TikToks, pictures. Outside of you, have you been studying set lists, Matt?
Not set lists.
Are you trying to go into it blind?
I was, I like to go in blind, but then I joined all these YouTube, Facebook groups, and I've seen all these pictures. And then I was trying to avoid set lists, but then I had to listen to the Scots talk about it, and they basically spoiled the whole show. Yeah. So, but that's fine. Yeah, it'll be good. I have researched the merch, though. I will tell you, I did research that. I do not want to be surprised by. And Chris is very happy about this. I think it's going to work really well because mm-hmm. there's a zoo station, like pop-up thing you can visit at the Venetian. So I can do that at any time during the day.
Anytime.
And then they said they've got the tents outside at the street. So I'm going to walk up. Chris got to work on Friday during the day anyway. So I'm going to walk mm-hmm. over there. I'm going to scope it out. I'm going to get my shopping done so that Chris doesn't have to put up with all of my agonizing. And it's going to be wonderful. Plus, I've scoped it out for the last few weeks. I still don't have it completely nailed down, but I've got a little chart. What I'm looking at, I got photos that people have taken of different shirts. It's great. I love being able to research the merch ahead of time.
Well, I'm excited for you, Matt. I look forward to hearing the report. I hope that you take a little Dramamine with you. A little concerned about the reports of motion sickness, which Ooh. Makes a lot of sense. So,
yeah.
Gosh, so excited for you, Matt. Looking forward to the review recap.
It's gonna be good. It's gonna be good. Well, for today, we've got to talk about the texts for October 15th, 2023. We've got some Isaiah and some Matthew. Does that sound familiar? It feels like we've been talking to these guys for a while.
We've been in these grooves for a while now.
Well, here's Isaiah. He's been, I don't know, have we got some apocalyptic stuff from Isaiah? I can't even remember. But I think
so.
I think
I
this is
very
I think
upset last week.
I think we're taking a turn for the better, maybe. Let's see. Let's see what it sounds like. Isaiah 25:1-9. O Lord, you are my God. I will exalt you. I will praise your name, for you have done wonderful things, plans formed of old, faithful and sure. For you have made the city a heap, the fortified city a ruin. The palace of aliens is a city no more. It will never be rebuilt. Therefore, strong peoples will glorify you. Cities of ruthless nations will fear you. For you have been a refuge to the poor, a refuge to the needy in their distress, a shelter from the rainstorm and a shade from the heat. When the blast of the ruthless was like a winter rainstorm, the noise of aliens like heat in a dry place, you subdued the heat with the shade of clouds. The song of the ruthless was stilled. On this mountain, the Lord of hosts will make for all peoples a feast of rich food, a feast of well-aged wines, of rich food filled with marrow, of well-aged wines strained clear. I hope you've been straining your wine. And he will destroy on this mountain the shroud that is cast over all peoples, the sheet that is spread over all nations. He will swallow up death forever. Then the Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces, and the disgrace of his people he will take away from all the earth. For the Lord has spoken. It will be said on that day, lo, this is our God. We have waited for him so that he might save us. This is the Lord for whom we have waited. Let us be glad and rejoice in his salvation. Word of God, word of life.
Thanks be to God. It's still apocalyptic, man. In the very literal sense that the apocalypse is like technically the unveiling. So that shroud cast over all peoples will be removed, but the apocalypse might not be so scary.
Hey man, thank you for that. Yeah. Yeah, it is apocalyptic in that. Yes. That great unveiling. Removing the sheet. Yeah.
Matt, I've thought about it this week. I'm not preaching this week. You're not preaching this week. So in that sense, we're lucky. What strikes me are the immediate allusions to current events in Israel and Palestine, which I've thought about how I would handle that as a preacher. And, you know, I think our advice that we usually give on hot topics is it needs to be incredibly contextual. So I'm not going to give any sort of blanket advice on what you should or should not do. But it's also a week where you might want to think, don't get fired as well. is always a part of the conversation. Live to fight another day. But I am struck by, I mostly have been caught up in like, oh, I don't know what I would do, right? Like, because you're going to get people upset with you. You don't talk about it. You say something about it, like really directly, definitely somebody's upset. Which is okay to upset people in preaching, right? But most of the time when people are upset, they don't listen. So you're not necessarily helping the good news to be transformative. But you get this big overarching picture that's clearly like not a practical answer to what we're looking at right now, but is a helpful preaching like technique maneuver to take here of this is what we're talking about, right? And you get this big, shiny good news. But then it has the opportunity, you've got the opportunity as a preacher to break it down into its smaller parts that are more manageable. Gosh, where'd it go? Strong peoples will glorify you. The ruthless will fear you. You've been a refuge. I like the refuge part here. Refuge to the poor, refuge to the needy in their distress, shelter from the rain, shade from the heat. I think that's the piece where you say, hey, there's no clear line between the world that we're living in and this big shiny picture of how good things are going to be. And there's not even a clear, achievable straight line between here and there. What do we do? And I think that's where you go, right? You go to this refuge for the needy. What are the other ones? If I had them all here. Refuge to the needy, refuge to the poor, and shelter from the rainstorm. Break it down into these really small pieces, and don't try to solve the issues of the day in Palestine.
And you can't solve the issues of the day in preaching?
Maybe not in 8 to 12 minutes of rhetoric heard by your church. I guess depending on your church, depending on who's in the pews.
Indeed. Yeah. Yeah, I remember the pastor of the church that we were a part of in Bloomington, Indiana, the Reverend Dr. Lyle McKee, who preached in my ordination service. He used to say he rarely preached on current events. There were a few exceptions, but he wasn't ignorant of them. He saw that his job as shaping Christian conscience over a long period of time. And I think that's something that you can do. I think that's here as well too, right? I mean, certainly like given what's going on in Israel and Palestine, there's room for some lament in your service, but also just this, the refuge to the needy, refuge to the poor, who is suffering, and rather than trying to solve all the problems, to direct our attention, maybe give us a place to put our attention, particularly people that maybe are not always, given that attention. I'm always struck in these moments how, or at least I have been struck this week by how all of the politicians seem to like just say their familiar lines. Like they just have to like slot into their positions. Like everyone just lines up on the chessboard like we always do. And none of it seems very helpful. But this at least seems to direct our attention in some particular places.
Good luck on that, preacher. Yeah, Matt, I think you're right.
So this text is also interesting in the way it's going to contrast with the gospel, which has a lot more violence in it. It's interesting to have these texts in conversation. So let's talk about this gospel.
Well, Matt, once more, because he just had so many of them to tell. Jesus spoke to the disciples in parables, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who gave a wedding banquet for his son. And he sent his slaves to call on those who had been invited to the banquet, but they would not come. So again, he sent other slaves, saying, tell those who have been invited, look, I've prepared my dinner, my oxen. I got some nice oxtail with the marrow in it off the streets of Bakersfield. My fat calves have been slaughtered. Everything is ready. Come to the banquet." But they made light of it went away, one to his farm, another to his business, while the rest seized his slaves, mistreated them, and killed them. Yikes. The king was enraged. He sent his troops, destroyed those murderers, and burned their city, as you do. And then he said to his slaves, "The wedding is ready, but those invited were not worthy. Go therefore into the streets and invite everyone you find to the wedding banquet." And those slaves went out into the street and gathered all whom they found, both the good and the bad. So the wedding hall was filled with guests. And when the king came in to see the guests, he noticed one man there who was not wearing a robe and said to him, "Friend, how did you get in here without a wedding robe?" And he was speechless. And the king said to the attendants, "Bind him hand and foot and throw him into the outer darkness where there is weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen." Matt, this is the good news of Jesus.
Praise to you.
Obviously. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Woo. So I like this one, Matt, a lot. Because.
Tell us why.
when you hear one like that and you hear me say, "I really like it," what it means is it's probably pretty Girardian. And again, woo, today, shout out to Friend of the Pod, the late Rene Girard. So we talked about it a little bit last week. I'm going to reorient you. We're going to change our compass around here. Let's not assume that the king in the parable is God or the good guy, right? We got to dislodge that first, right? And in a particularly Girardian reading of this story, which again, Girardianism is all about scapegoating and seeing the world through our kind of anti-holy desires to scapegoat, that Jesus is the one who gets thrown out into the street, into the outer darkness. And the way that I've heard this story told, in particular by James Allison, who's a Girardian guy down in Brazil, is, you know, you get the whole, to go back to that Isaiah text, refuge for the poor, for the needy, shelter, you get all that action happening here, right? There's the poor people, everybody in the street, everybody gets to come to the wedding banquet. It is this vision of the kingdom. And if it stopped there, everybody would feel pretty good about that, I think, hearing this on Sunday morning. But instead, what happens when you gather all those folks together, when the differences between people are erased, the people in charge get a little uneasy with that. Because it's no longer clear if all of us are mixed together in the same place that this person should be in charge anymore. Why is there a king if we're all eating together and having a party together? And so the king needs to restore order a bit. And so it is important to make an example out of someone, to scapegoat, to kick out the outsider in order that we might be made whole, which is a recurring thing that I would say a lot about what how scapegoating works in the sense that it helps us, how it helps us and why we like it, right? Is it makes us whole by creating the outsider. And so Jesus here steps in and makes us whole kind of against our will, right? That Jesus is the one who gets kicked out of the party so that the party can continue. But again, I probably said it a million times on the podcast that in response to our desire for a scapegoat, God says that's a not very fun way to do it. But if you require a scapegoat, fine, we can do that. Here's Jesus to be the scapegoat, right? So again, not God, not the king demanding the sacrifice, but us demanding the sacrifice.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah, I appreciate that. There is such a temptation to turn this into an allegory where God is the king and we run through that whole line, and it's not an allegory, it's parable. And also just, again, to like rotate that, if we want to do these equal signs in there, to rotate that around. And when we find ourselves in the place of the king, this is the thing that we do. We like to kick people out to make ourselves whole. Yes. Yeah.
I remember it was a surprising part of getting married, Matt, because I don't know about you, but I'm I've participated in holy matrimony myself. And when you have a wedding, you got to send out invitations just like this, right? And we sent out the invitations, and I was disturbed to hear that the mail carriers who carried those invitations to the invited guests, some of them were brutally murdered because the guest did not want to come. And that was a surprise, but that's just a normal part of weddings.
It's just a normal part, yeah. Yep.
When I receive an invitation, whether it's to a party, a bat mitzvah, open house, if I'm not going, I'm going to murder the person who brought me the invitation, Matt. It's right. Just the way it's done.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's typically what's printed on those invitations. Like, yes, I will attend, or with regret and cold-blooded murder. That's just, that's what you do.
That's right. That's exactly what that box is.
I mean, that's why the person delivering the message is always so nervous to give it to you, because your life depends on your response.
Do want to shout out during this hot labor summer, all messengers, independent carriers who are doing this important work. They're the real heroes, inviting people to weddings
and trying not to get killed for it. Yeah.
And trying not to get killed. Well, I mean, I don't know if they're trying or not. They just know that's a part of the job.
Part of the job, yeah.
That's the other thing. When you're sending out invitations, the mail carrier has, like, before they take you on as a client, you know, they want to, like, get a good feel for, like, are people going to accept this? Or is this going to be a good party, a bad party? Didn't seem to matter with these folks, though. The king said, this is a pretty good one. And they said, don't care. Murder.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, yes.
Which actually, to pivot into slightly serious things, raises really interesting questions about the king, right? That, like, so that would be an insane thing to do to me, a person, right? Like a normal person. But to murder messengers of the king, who's ostensibly the king, raises some interesting questions about how powerful the king is. Is the king good? Feared, respected, how, you know, there's a lot of, this is a, not a clear cut. This isn't King Arthur, if you will, or Prince Charming come king here. This is an interesting character.
Yeah. 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 The story, gosh, it's so much more complex, than we think it is. And I think that's the core, is what you said at the beginning, right? That this is, so it seems ridiculous. And I think we've got to read it that way, but also it's not that far off from how crazy we can actually be as people. You read it in a story and you go, that's nuts. Yeah. But we do actually kill people for ridiculous reasons. Like, it's just, these are things that happen. And so when this becomes, if we let this parable be a mirror for ourselves, it starts to make a lot more sense. It can lead us in some much more helpful directions. And it's unfortunate that one thing that we've done, I think, over, we've found a way to put God, make God the king, which then creates all these attributes of God that are basically just attributes of us, right? It's just another way that we've made God look like us. And if we can let this be, no, this is what we do. This is not what God does. It might lead us in some more helpful directions for preaching.
I like it, man.
Well, what are we listening to?
Matt, I got a little wedding playlist for you that I don't recommend you play at your wedding. Maybe that's what we should have done. I think I'm going to do it. I'm going to go ahead and put the wedding song that I recall from my wedding off the top, At My Most Beautiful, which is off of Ariana's, which... coming out this fall. Pre-orders are already sold out, and I missed it on vinyl, the 25th anniversary of the album. Came out in 1998, R.E.M.'s first album post-Bill Berry leaving the band. I wonder what kind of shape R.E.M. would play in. If they could play in one geometric shape, if U2 is a sphere, maybe rhombus? Rhombus is what I'm going to go with. R.E.M. in a rhombus. So I'm going to put that on a playlist. It was our main song, wedding song, first dance, whatever. Then some less traditional wedding songs. I'm going to give you Lake Street Dive out of Boston, which is really frustrating. I'd like them to be from Chicago, which is where Lake Street Drive is. But they've got a song called Wedding Band. If you're married, wear a wedding band. There's no need for you to whisper in my ear. And so I think that's fairly evocative of the Isaiah text here, where it's like, you got to do some stuff. You got to be refuge for the needy and the poor. Then, Matt, a new song to me, The Wedding List by Kate Bush, that I'd never heard before. And it's a little intense. It was inspired by Francois Truffaut's film called The Bride Wore Black, and it tells of a groom who is accidentally murdered on the day of his wedding by a group of five people who shoot at him from a window, and the bride succeeds in tracking down each one of the five and kills them.
What? So
that's pretty intense. And apropos of these texts, and finally the classic bad news kind of wedding song, White Wedding, by your friend and mine, Billy Idol.
Indeed. I just saw him the other day. He's doing well.
Was he at the podcast thing?
Yeah, yeah. He's one of the...
He's really into...
He gets books on it. Mm-hmm.
Good, good, good.
Oh, my goodness. Well, three songs. Thinking about clothing, this imagery of clothing at the end. And I got to pick a U2 song from Mocktongue Baby. I'm going to go with The Fly, where Bono puts on these giant fly shades. He does he actually calls it like a rock identikit or something, like a mail-to-order kit, where he puts on a leather jacket. Like, he's this very stereotypical rock stuff that he puts on for this persona that he takes on as they launch the Mocktongue Baby album and tour. Very, very different look from the Joshua Tree, and very intentional in that way. And he's inspired by this Oscar Wilde quote. Did I just watch a documentary about this over the weekend? Yes, I did. And he quotes Oscar Wilde, who says, "Man is least himself when he talks in his own person. Give him a mask and he will tell you the truth." And so just this idea, you know, we can put on a mask with what we wear. And sometimes that is the best way to speak truth. The Fly by U2. I needed some other clothing songs, and it made me think of a Juanes song, Camisa Negra, probably his most famous song. Put this one on. It is a banger. It is so catchy. Just so incredibly catchy.
That's what my afternoon is going to be,
Negra, you know? So I assume that's what the wedding robe was. It was a black shirt, a camisa negra. And then finally, from Isaiah, I'll give you Shelter from the Rainstorm. And I assume Bob Dylan was reading that when he wrote Shelter.
Shelter from the storm. I like it, Matt. Another thing I like here on a bonus episode of Let's Review the Podcast, the Midnight Boys loved the first episode of Loki. And I really enjoyed the part where one of them, I didn't realize one of them was white. So I don't know if it was him or not, who said he just really likes watching, like, it's really a breath of fresh air to have like real mood, like stars with Tom Hiddleston and Owen Wilson on in the episode. And they were like, they gave him what they called transatlantic slave points because he disgraced Samuel L. Jackson. the new Captain America and what's his name? The Rock guy. That was really enjoyable. That was it. Gosh, what's his name? Who was in like Hotel Rwanda? Don Cheadle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there have been plenty of stars. That's not really the problem. But Owen Wilson is great. I did watch that first episode and it was good. It was good stuff.
It was good. I agreed with him. I had no idea what was happening, but it was pretty fun.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Good times.
Good app.
Good app. Are you caught up on You Talking U2 to Me / You Spring and Springsteen on My Bean?
I've watched U2, or not watched. I've not watched any of them. I've listened to the Sphere episode, just finished listening to that. I got room for improvement on Bruce. I got to get caught up on Bruce. But the trouble is I just want to savor it. Like, I don't want to, like...
Sure.
You know, I need to go...
What album are you on?
I think I'm on the second episode, like where they've now started to get into the music.
I really appreciate it. And they're talking about Wild Innocent and the E Street Shuffle, and they're talking about the album cover, and they're like, he's just holding some like marbles in his mouth. And he's like, this is like what he looks like on the cover. And now I can't look at that cover the same way again. I took it out to play it after listening to the episode, and I was like, I can't stop laughing because he's just standing there. I'm like, I wonder what he's got in his mouth. Great. Incredible show.
It's good. You should check it out, dear listener. And The Ringer should have like a Ringerverse con, like a Ringer con.
They're talking about that. They're trying to the Ringer Facebook group, which is can be pretty toxic, has been pitching a Ringerverse con. I think they're going to do a live taping at the end of October. I just don't know if I want to fight the crowds for that one.
That's what our listeners say every time we announce a live show. because we care about them.
It's true. We care about you, dear listener. Well, we welcome your feedback. We are grateful for you listening, and it's been real.
Real vinyl.